My name is Monica Staten. I am a contributor to the Chicago Jazz Magazine. You are listening to The Future Is Now, a series that I have developed to shine a light on up-and-coming artists in Chicago and beyond. Today's guest is Alexis Lumbra. Alexis is originally from Chicago. She then moved to Ann Arbor, where she attended the University of Michigan. Alexis is known for playing highly energetic jazz with a strong influence of blues that can often be heard on old hard bop recordings by artists like Art Blakey, Horace Silver, and Cannonball Adderley. Welcome, Alexis. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for joining me. It's an honor. And I will jump right in. What's your earliest music memory?
Well, my earliest music memory, well, to be honest, it was, I went to William H. Ray Elementary School in Hyde Park.
Okay.
And my very first music teacher in kindergarten was none other than Bethany Pickett.
Oh, wow.
So, okay. Yeah. She taught, you know, elementary school music. You know, and I was there from K through sixth grade, so that was my first, I feel like, formal introduction into music was through Bethany Pickett. So.
Okay. Now, how old were you when you began playing piano? And was that your first instrument, the piano?
That's a good question. So, I started taking lessons on piano since I was probably 9. Mm-hmm. But when I was like 6, 7, 8, I would like tinker around, and mm-hmm. I was always unafraid to show off what little I knew, which wasn't much.
Okay.
And my eventually, like, you can't keep getting up and playing piano for people when you don't know how to play piano.
Okay.
So I had the pride to show off before I actually had any, you know, skills. So now, you know, she got me lessons when I was like 9 and 10 years old.
Okay. And I read that you attended the Merritt School of Music. Was that your first lesson or?
Merritt was later.
Okay.
My very first lessons were classical lessons.
So okay.
I took with a teacher named Olivia Coleman, who taught at the Fine Arts Building downtown. Just classical, you know, Suzuki method, you know, okay. Working up to Suzuki method. And then I went to another teacher named Otto Roser, and that was fun because I was like 12.
Okay.
And he kind of let me explore. And, you know, he taught me what the blues scale was. We went over Eddie Harris. I mean, he also like exposed me to, you know, Fiona Apple and like just let me experiment. Then when I was 12, mm-hmm. At the end of going towards 13 is when I started studying with Steve Million at Merritt School of Music.
Okay.
And that's who, like, really got me into, like, jazz theory and, like hardcore, like, improvisational theory and, like, stuff like that. And at the same time, I was taking classical lessons, too.
Okay.
Yeah, I took classical lessons at the same time, but then the classical lessons teacher was like, no, you can't, you have to pick one. And I was like, okay, I'm going to pick jazz then.
Okay.
That's how you're going to act.
And so why did you choose mm-hmm. jazz? Was it more open or it allowed you more freedom?
Jazz was just more of my personality, honestly,
okay.
Because like I really love playing classical music, and some of the pieces I played were so beautiful, and I love, you know, expressing that. But jazz, I mean, I just related to more, you know, because of, you know, like you said, the freedom,
mm-hmm.
you know, I could put the book in, you know, if sometimes I would practice a classical piece and then I would hear something and want to put it in there, but I can't
okay.
because it's a classical piece, but where jazz is like, I can do my own thing for the most part,
okay.
and I would always enjoy that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Alexis, you've said in previous interviews that the Detroit jazz scene adopted you Can you tell me a bit more about your experience in Detroit and how you arrived in Detroit?
Yeah, so my experience with Detroit really came from me studying at the University of Michigan, which I just graduated from.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I had to forget it.
Are you in Chicago now?
Yes, okay. I'm back in Chicago.
Okay.
So that was basically, you know, when I went to University of Michigan and Ann Arbor, you know, I'm always someone who, you know, you learn from school in a school context, but I always like to be more hands-on and be out in a scene. So I heard great things about Detroit and their music culture and legacy. I mean, at the time, I knew about, like, their Motown and their R&B, mm-hmm. but I was not privy to their legendary bebop legacy.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of being in Detroit, I mean, going to saxophonist Wendell Harrison's house, where he will literally sit and teach you how to play bebop and sit and, like, you know, sit and go over the theory with you. And you know, he has kids come over his basement every week to mm-hmm. teach him how to play bebop. So that's one of the institutions, I mean, unofficial institutions in Detroit that really, you know, kind of took me in and helped me out. I mean, and then you have Marion Hayden, the great bassist, Galen McKinney, who were great, you know, stellar musicians and great women and mentors for me to you know, believe in me and, you know, help me be on the scene. And then going to jam sessions, I went to the jam session at first, Marketplace, mm-hmm. where John Douglas, holds his Friday late night session. And, you know, I came there and I laughed. Okay, so he brought me there. Mm-hmm. Well, no, he didn't bring me there. I went there with my mom because it was late. Mm-hmm. And I sat in, and then he went up to me, and he just said, "You just got somebody fired." Man, I've been playing that gig. So I played that gig for like 2 years in a row, and then from playing that gig, I played with him to the Detroit Jazz Festival. So it's just kind of, you know, once you're sitting on a jam session, then mm-hmm. people, like, jam sessions are like, I wouldn't say a job interview, but kind of like the LinkedIn.
Oh, yeah. You proved yourself and you gained a job or a spot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's basically what happened. You know, like, jam sessions are kind of like the LinkedIn of the mm-hmm. music world, where people get to, you know, hear you play and see what you're made of. And, yeah, I was just fortunate to be one of the young people, because Detroit is a city where they really want to encourage young people to play and keep, you know, the jazz tradition alive. So when you see a young person, they're very eager to support them in any way they can in a very loving way.
Okay. You started playing professionally at about the age of 14. Here in Chicago, how did your experience in Chicago differ? Just tell me about your experience in Chicago as a new, fresh, vibrant jazz artist. And were you embraced by the Chicago's jazz scene as well?
Yeah, I was totally embraced. First and foremost, I was mm-hmm. totally embraced. I was totally loved, mm-hmm. Flat out. That was, mm-hmm. you know, that's hands down. You know, my mom would say loves me, and mm-hmm. I love them.
Mm-hmm.
The way I got into the jazz scene was through programs like the Ravinia Scholars Program,
okay.
Which is a high school program where, you know, high schoolers can be mentored by, like, Dennis Carroll and Woodley Pickens and Pat Bellinger and Perez and, like, all these really killing jazz musicians. So, and then they told us all about this late-night jam session at Andy's. So I went there.
Mm-hmm.
I was either 14 or 15, and I went there, and I played, and I was scooped up by the likes of Junius Paul, who saw me And he was like, you're my little sister. And Justin Bieber was there too. He was like, we're adopting you. You're our little sister. And that's it. So from that point forward, like, they would, you know, I would hang out at their shows and they would tell me about music and I would chat with them. They would kick my butt when I needed it, you know, and they brought me up. They definitely trained me as well as their mentors and as well as, shoot, many other people. Joan Colasso, I played some gigs for her. Okay. She was just trying to bring up young people. Charles Heath is huge on, you know, mentoring young people and wanting them to write their own songs and have their own voice.
And how were both, you know, those experiences, Colasso and John, Mr. Heath?
Yeah. They were great. Okay. You know?
Okay.
They were great.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, but what I really, and then also another huge player in that was Ernest Dawkins, too. And it's still Ernest Dawkins.
Okay.
Just want to throw that out there. And what's great about Chicago is they are much more tough love.
Okay.
So I that's definitely been webbed into the fiber of how I experience music and rehearse music is with that same grain of like tough love. And it's like, you sound like, you do not sound good. Go to the shed, sound better. Or, like, you're flat, or, you know, like, people will tell you and be straight up with you. And it might hurt your feelings, but it's not about your feelings. It's about playing the music right. And that's what I grew up with on the Chicago scene, that, you know, that kind of bluntness and straightforwardness was definitely helpful for me. And I don't know, I'm just kind of strong and fiery, so I always enjoyed that. Because I like it when people are very straightforward with me. So, no, it was great, you know. Being in Chicago is, you know, great, yeah.
And how do you know when to accept the critique?
What were you going to say?
People may offer, like, their opinions of, you know, the quality of your music. But how and when do you know, you know, this is something I should accept or, you know, give some thought? Do you have like a barometer? Like, when do you know to accept the critique and or to reject it?
Sure. Well, generally, from someone like Willie Pickens, you accept it. You accept everything he said. Like, Willie Pickens was 86 or 85, so he's lived about four times as longer as I have. Mm-hmm. So therefore, like, it's just right, period.
Okay.
So you don't really question that. And that's how I kind of felt with, you know, a lot of the older musicians. It's just like, they live longer, I accept it. You know, especially when it came to dealing with my improvisational skills and like my chord voicings or the way I comp, like when someone who I want to sound like tells me I need to change something, I change it because I want to sound more like Willie Pickens than I do like 13-year-old Alexis.
Okay.
You know,
I understand.
So I'm just gonna listen. Now that I'm getting older and I'm like 23 and I'm trying to chat out my own voice, there's some things that I mull around a little longer at in terms of, like, my artistic direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's some people who believe that, you know, want to do the straight-ahead jazz forever and ever and ever, and then there's, you know, other people who say, oh, you should do this. And so when it comes to, like, my own artistic voice, you have to just cultivate my own artistic voice. It is not like shaking on anyone, like, I'm not listening to you. It's just more so listening to myself and wanting to take in different influences to make it the best it can be.
Okay.
Because at this point, I don't want to be a clone of anyone. I just want to be the best Alexis Lombre. But, like, as you're coming up and you're in a master class and, you know, you have somebody great coming in, like a Benny Green or like Willie Pickens coming in saying, like, okay, like, you're dragging or your time isn't good or you need more theory or blah, blah, blah. You just listen because you want to sound like them.
Okay.
Don't.
Oh, yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. Which brings me to my next question. It sounds like you've had a pretty exciting career thus far. You mentioned that you're now 23. You've worked with some of the great young voices in jazz also, like Kendrick Scott, Marquise Hill, Isaiah Collier. And your teachers have included legends like Benny Green of the Jazz Messengers and the late Willie Pickens. Just wanted to know, are younger musicians better equipped to embrace the ideas and leadership of strong women as band leaders and collaborators? And that was a mouthful. But yeah, what's your experience with that?
Well, okay, so I am going to be very honest. Mm-hmm. So, by younger, like, well, that's a good question. Because I'm growing up in Chicago and playing in Detroit, like, from the older generations of like 60 and up, or mm-hmm. you know, Detroit and Chicago both. I've 60, 50 and up, 40 and up. You know, I've never ever felt any kind of them being uncomfortable with me as a band leader, because they knew the history and they knew about people like Terry Pollard and Mary Lou Williams and, you know, Dorothy Donegan and all these people, all these women who were great musicians and, you know, deserved to lead as much as anyone else did. So they knew about them, and they never put that on me.
Okay.
I never felt that, and they've always raised me as equal. Honestly, I kind of felt like growing up, I was kind of more, people were more harder on me because they knew that they could be.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, sometimes you see the only girl in the program and you're nicer than the only girl because you don't want to be too hard on her.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're like, you beat up on the guys. I feel like I was beat up more so.
Okay.
Because, like, because they knew I was tough, you know. So I never felt any kind of difference with that. But for now, the 30s, 80s group, super encouraging and super, like, you know, you can do this. And, you know, taught me how to band lead in many different ways and mentored me and, you know, never, kind of the same thing. They knew their history and they're more mature, so they never put any sexism on me. Now, I feel like the youngest ones are, I grew up, it was difficult because, you know, it's kind of, I kind of face the, oh, you got beat by a girl mentality.
Okay.
You know, none of them wanted to get beat by a girl. You know,
mm-hmm.
like if you're a young girl on a basketball court with all your dudes and dunking on football, people aren't going to like you. Because mm-hmm. it's like, you got dunked on by a girl kind of thing. I feel like as they get older, I mean, and people are being more progressive in general about, you know, being not being sexist and being, you know, more feminist
mm-hmm.
kind of mindset, but growing up wasn't the, for me, with folks my age, wasn't that easy.
And you know what, I feel like your generation has paved the way in that respect. You're a generation of women, you know, the Me Too movement, or, you know, or wanting to be viewed and treated as an equal. Yeah. But.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, like, I kind of see myself more so in the way of the age groups played out was, like, folks my age kind of more so didn't rock with me as much, so my best friends were an older age group. Like,
okay.
My friends
okay.
during high, like, everybody, like, young men in high school who are musicians, like, played with each other and like hung out with each other all the time. We're like my best friends were like Junius and Justin. But then I had to call you, you know, play together a ton during high school too. That was like one of the people I played with and collaborated with a bunch. But it wasn't a ton of that. And I feel like as especially younger men mature, they see the value in that.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the younger cats, like the cats much younger than me, won't treat girls. I have hope that they don't treat girls as bad as
mm-hmm.
I was treated.
Okay.
You know, I feel like they're going to get a little better. But yeah.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Oh, perfect sense. Okay, your last album, South Side Sounds, was released in 2017. You composed, arranged, and produced this project. Are you working on a new recording?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
But the coronavirus, COVID, is jacking up.
I know, right?
This, the production progress. And it's, I had friends who called me up and were like, so how's that happen? So how's that single? How is this? And I, and I always appreciate when people are, you know, there's people out there who are waiting for it, who want it. Mm-hmm. It'll come.
Okay.
It'll come.
Okay.
It's coming. It's coming.
Okay. How do you come up with the title of your debut album?
Brainstorming with my mom, honestly.
Okay.
I think that's literally how it came about. I was brainstorming with my mom because I'm often needing things.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the songs were just songs about me growing up on the South Side and
of Chicago.
Yeah, on the South Side of Chicago. Yes.
Okay.
South Side of Chicago.
Okay.
And yeah, if I'm not wrong, I think I'm going to give the credit to my mom.
Okay.
I think I'm going to go ahead and do it. Yeah, I think that was her.
Okay. And how does Chicago influence your music?
Ooh. Well, mm-hmm. How does Chicago influence my music? How does the dirt affect a tree?
Mm-hmm.
How does fertilizer affect a flower?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that same relationship.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. just that.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, just the soul that I came from, the soul that's in Chicago, the soul that's in the air and the soil, was in me, and I mean, I am it. Like,
okay.
that's the only experience I've known is growing up in Chicago, so if that makes sense.
Perfect sense, which is a perfect segue for my next question. You've often stated one of your missions is to keep the soul in music alive. Is that what people respond to when they hear your music?
They respond to the soul of it,
yes.
You mean?
And yeah, how does the soul influence your sound?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a person who's been very expressive,
mm-hmm.
and a person that, you know, when I listen to music, I like to feel good. When I play, I like to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, that was my only ethos, the way I played, was I wasn't really concerned with a bunch of notes. I was concerned with, does this have a funk?
Okay.
Does it got the hump in it? Does it feel good?
Okay.
So I think for a long time, that's pretty much 85% of what I hope people got.
Mm-hmm.
85% of what I hope people got was that, because that's all I was really putting in there.
Okay.
And what was the other part of your question?
You know what? You answered my questions both. The last part was, how does soul influence your sound?
I mean, it is my sound.
Okay.
It, that is so part of me. And it's who I am, too. And, you know, my mom and I, she jokes about how as a baby, I wasn't eating baby food, I was eating collard greens.
Okay.
You know? Okay. So I was really, yeah, I was, you know, that's who I am, you know, and, you know, feisty, and mm-hmm. I've always been bold and, you know, loud, and so I'm just being myself. Okay. I guess, yeah, soul is myself. I mean, being a black woman, like, mm-hmm. what's more soulful than that, you know?
Not too much, no.
You said, right, so mm-hmm. that just is me, and I mm-hmm. just, I don't shy away from it. It just, I don't see why, you know?
Okay. When was your last live performance?
My last live performance was on March 2nd.
With Marquise Hill at the Chicago yep. Winery. Okay.
Hmm. That was my last live performance. Mm-hmm.
Okay. In 2019, you had an exhausting tour schedule. Before the COVID-19 pandemic, what did 2020 look like for you?
That's a great question. So mm-hmm. it was funny because when you're in your final semester, I was in my final semester of senior year college, mm-hmm. and I was starting to get burnt out, to mm-hmm. be honest. So mm-hmm. I was already, you know, taking, Marquise gig was going to be my last gig for a while because I was just so worn out.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, I'm not going to gig March, April, because I'm just going to worry about graduating.
Mm-hmm.
And then May when I graduated, I'm going to take another month off because I graduated and tired. And then June, I had a tour plan.
Oh, wow.
I had a tour plan. It was through Minneapolis, Madison, I had something working out in Quad Cities, Kansas City, St. Louis, Chicago, Detroit, and Toronto that I was trying to work out. Mm-hmm. And, so I was going to basically hide for 3 months and then tour tour in June.
Okay.
So I just turned from, okay, I guess I'm just going to hide for longer than 3 months.
Okay. So what does your day look like now? Yeah. You know, now that you're not touring, you're out of school.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's a good question. I mean, I get up. I actually try to keep a good biological clock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get up around 10,
mm-hmm.
maybe 11, and I do some exercises. I do some Pilates or something. I mm-hmm. work out or something, and then I make breakfast and practice. Mm-hmm. For like 4 or 5 hours.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, because what else is there? You can just practice forever. And then, right now I'm just working on not necessarily remodeling, but reorganizing and redecorating my house because I'm going to be in here for a while. So
okay.
I just wanted to spice it up. So that's basically my main projects are practicing and spicing up my house.
Okay.
Since I'm going to be in here.
Okay. How are you keeping hold of your identity as a musician? You know.
That's a great question because I've definitely struggled with that. Mm-hmm. That's something I've totally struggled with was suffering through the feeling of being so non-essential.
Mm-hmm.
For like the first, part of this month, I've just felt so unimportant and so just like, I'm not essential. No one needs to be, I'm not, important. But then I'm surrounded by really good people, really good friends who call and check up on me. And then I share them these thoughts. And it's like, what are you talking about? Just go write a song or something. Like, mm-hmm. people want to hear you, So that's something that I'm coming back around to accept.
Okay.
It's been tough.
Okay. Are you listening to anything in particular these days?
Yes.
Okay.
I am.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny because you know, this is a jazz interview, and I haven't listened to, like, most of my music listening takes form of, you know, what I'm cleaning my house to, or, you know, doing my hair or something. So I've been listening to a lot to, like, Janae Aiko's new album, Chilombo, you know. But when it's, like, when I'm practicing, you know, I, you know, Oscar Peterson's Night Train.
Okay.
You know, let's see. What else have I been listening to? Solange, Thundercat, you know, you know, Kendrick Lamar, you know, stuff like that.
And you mentioned Janae Jalambo. I haven't heard of that artist. Can you spell her name?
Sorry, Janae Aiko. Yeah, Janae? Her name is Janae.
Okay, okay.
She has an album named Chilombo, yeah.
Okay, got it. Are you playing anything in particular? What's your, like, go-to music at this time? What do you enjoy playing?
Honestly, I've been, if I'm being totally honest, I've been, I mean, I've been practicing. You know, I first started my shed with some Oscar because, you know, there's things I still want to learn from him. But I also practice and learn Hiatus Coyote songs.
Okay.
Because, honestly, digging into their music, there's so much deep stuff that the pianist is doing to enhance the song. And, you know, most of that band are trained jazz musicians. I know the pianist, like, went to, I think, studied jazz here in America so I can't remember which college she went to, but yeah, they're pretty heavy.
Yeah,
so,
they are. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's super fresh, and I just enjoy it, and it's fun for me. Yeah. Because there's no rules. I don't have to, there's no gigs, so I don't have to be pressured to learn anything for anyone else.
Okay. I have just a few more questions.
That's fine.
Okay. What do you miss most since being under quarantine?
Most? Well, number one is hugs. Yeah. I miss hugs so much. Mm-hmm. I'm such a hugger. I'm such a hugger. And then I miss income, okay.
Yeah.
I miss that whole, you know, grinding and that whole thing. I do miss the grind. And, yeah, hugging, the grind, and my friends, you know, I just wish that I could just hang out with my friends, that's all, and jam with each other again. I do miss that a bunch.
And what is your
big practice?
I'm sorry, go ahead, no. You said when you practice?
Yeah, when I'm practicing all by myself, I just miss feeling a bass player and a drummer with me, like, or a saxophone player. Like, you know, it's people I just miss playing with, you know?
Okay. Is there a silver lining anywhere in this for you?
Sure, yeah, sure there's a silver lining. I mean, I was so burnt out that I really get a chance to actually take a break and actually get some good habits, because, you know, I lived my life so on the go that there's a lot of habits that I feel like I could just work on, you know, in terms of self-care and all that I really get to focus on. And it's just, for me, yeah, it's just an equalizer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know I'm going to sound cheesy, but one thing that unites us all is, like, this experience of having been held back on this so you can figure out what really matters.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I don't miss is all the things, you know, the networking and the hobnob and the, you know, trying to get clout kind of thing behind the show, behind the scenes and all that kind of unimportant kind of stuff, and it just makes me so much more grateful of what I have.
Okay.
So for me, it's just, you know, I don't know, I just been very lucky to be healthy and that my family is healthy. And I know it's hard because I know a lot of people who've lost loved ones. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm just, you know, grateful for the time to actually take a break and grateful to actually take some time to know what's actually important and not focus on any of that superficial stuff to try to impress people or, you know, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. I hope that makes sense.
Perfect sense. What's the first thing you're going to do when it's safe to do whatever you want?
Let me think. The first thing to do, I was joking to myself as I was getting ready when I was like, man, as soon as this is over, I'm going to be out in the streets for like 2 weeks straight. Mm-hmm. It's just like, damn, come on. Which is, I mean, that's not realistic. I'm not really going to be on the streets for 2 weeks straight, but that's mm-hmm. probably not too far from it. Like, I'm probably just going to be grab my girlfriends and just hit the club. I haven't celebrated my birthday. Oh, wow. I haven't celebrated graduation fully. Oh, so yeah. I'm just going to make up for lost time.
Yeah, that's that right. Sense. When is your birthday?
March 23rd.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And graduation. Yeah.
So, and graduation, so I got some missed partying to catch up on, so mm-hmm. so that's basically what that's going to be.
Okay. Do you have any upcoming, concerts, live stream, performances that we can check out?
That's in the works.
Okay.
That's definitely in the works. I mean, depending on how long we're in this quarantine, I'm definitely going to do something.
Okay.
But when I really solidify a date, you can go to alexislombre.com and sign up for my email list under the prompt right when you get on the website, and I will definitely send out an e-blast. And if you follow me on Instagram at my first name, last name, Alexis Lombre, I'll definitely make it known there and on my Facebook, which is the same Alexis Lombre. If people can like and follow and subscribe to my email list, and so they'll be the first to know.
Okay, can you spell your name for me, please?
Sure. First name, Alexis, and then my last name is Lom, as in mom, B, boy, R-E.
Okay, thank you so much. And my final question, is there anything you'd like to add that I may not have covered? Like, is there something? I think I was pretty thorough.
I think you asked great questions. I mean, mm-hmm. I love to talk, mm-hmm. so I want to make sure I didn't miss anything. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of this pandemic, like, I knew what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. I wanted to say, even though, you know, the pandemic's been hitting the Black community pretty hard, mm-hmm. I feel naturally more resilient as a Black person, though.
Okay.
Like, being a Black person and a Black woman, like, and already having society kind of, like, already kind of be down on you and be hard on you, mm-hmm. like, it's, for me, it's easier just to be resilient, and that's somebody who has, you know, kind of grew up hard and, like, didn't come up with a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually, this is the most comfortable I've been, you know, like, I have everything, and I'm good, you know. I'm comfortable, I'm safe, I'm healthy. So mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, COVID really stressing me out, it doesn't. Not as much. I mean, sometimes I do, when do I ever play a gig? But, mm-hmm. you know, we're all worried about that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not alone in that. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Alexis. It was a pleasure. And I cannot wait to hear you perform live. Get back out there.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you for having me and thinking of interviewing me. This was definitely a highlight because, you know, when you said, how do you keep grasping your identity? Like, mm-hmm. I'm over here feeling real non-essential, and then I get an interview, and it's like, yes, mm-hmm. here I am.